Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Toby Webb, and I'm delighted that joining me today in the podcast is Ashley Allen, who is Climate and Land Senior Manager for Mars. So welcome, Ashley.
Thank you very much.
So we are here in Washington, D.C. at the Nature Conservancy at our conference on how agriculture and innovation can work together with technology to drive better results. And yesterday, Ashley, you did a very interesting session with Glenn Prickett from the Nature Conservancy about Mars's commitments to climate change and how you're delivering results and transforming your agricultural supply chain. So maybe you could just start us off by talking through what we remember of your key points from yesterday.
For Mars, sustainability is a really key priority. It always has been throughout our history. It's part of our founding principles and a major priority of the Mars family. As you know, we're a privately owned company. And our climate change work has really been the latest iteration of that. And so last year, we launched our Sustainable in a Generation plan. And as part of that, we launched a science-based target on climate change to cut our full value chain emissions. So not just what we do within our operations, but also all of our suppliers throughout the value chain, all the way to the farm level, and then all the way the other direction to the consumer, to cut those greenhouse gas emissions by 27% by 2025 and by 67%, so a two-thirds cut, by 2050. And that's accompanied by a land goal to keep the land area flat that is used to produce the goods that we source.
Wow, that's quite ambitious, isn't it? So when you're talking to your colleagues about scope 3 emissions, I guess as they call them when you're going back to the supply chain, how do you get your heads around measuring the impact that you're having there?
Of course, it's our best guess based on the best data available. So we work with a lot of expert groups like the World Resources Institute, the Nature Conservancy, obviously, Qantas, and some others that have done a lot of work to measure the life cycle impact of things like beef and corn and cocoa and soy and things like that. And so we use the measurements that they've produced and then translate them to our value chain and essentially multiply that impact by the amount of those goods that we need to produce our beloved products like M&Ms and Pedigree dog food and things like that.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you said yesterday it takes 2.3 million hectares to grow 142 Mars ingredients. It doesn't make sense to do life cycle stuff for 142. So you do the most material ones, and then you extrapolate from there. Is that how it works?
We use the life cycle assessments for every possible ingredient that's available within our supply chain. And 142 is just an estimate because really, you know, 142 looks at, for example, corn, but doesn't necessarily break it up between corn syrup and ground corn and things like that. It really just looks at that particular commodity together. So we use what's available for as many ingredients as that information is available, and then we sort of make adjustments or use proxies as we need, but we try to be as explicit and as accurate as possible.
Wow. So has it cost tens of millions to do these analyses for all these different products? I mean, they always used to say that life cycle analysis was incredibly expensive. How does it work for you guys?
Well, actually, we're really lucky because there's many, many companies that are using this data now. So we participate in a group that supports the World Food Life Cycle Analysis Database that many companies are a part of. And the data then goes into that database, and companies can then pay to extract that data from that database so that we're all using a consistent and standardized measure for these things, but we're not also all paying for the work to be done completely separately. Now, the caveat to that is where there are sort of special ingredients that we source that aren't already in the database where we can support this analysis, we do. And so we actually support the group that runs that database, Qantas, to do some of the analysis on, I don't have an example in my mind right now, but just some of the ingredients that aren't already part of that package.
Okay, makes sense. A good example of where collaboration, pre-competitive collaboration, the three magic words, have cut costs for everybody, I guess. So you talked yesterday about with GHGs, changing what we buy and using different animal proteins in pet food that might have a lower GHG footprint, for example. Could you tell us a bit more about that? That sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, so the way we look at how we reduce our carbon footprint, what are the levers of influence that we can use in order to reduce that overall footprint is to change where we source an ingredient. So, for example, if we know that a particular oil or something comes from an area where there's high deforestation or where there is low water availability, so high water stress, can we source that ingredient from a different place that doesn't have those same negative impacts? That's one way. The second way, like you said, is changing what we source. So just looking at what within the recipes for our goods, what are the combinations of ingredients and where can we make adjustments there? For example, in the different types of animal protein, you know, we source a lot of beef, pork, chicken, turkey, several different animal proteins for our pet food. And we really are taking a deep look at how can we adjust those combinations or take a look at where the impact is from each of those ingredients and find the right mix so that we're overall reducing our impact on the environment. And then the last thing that we can do and where we're putting a lot of focus is working with others to make sure that these goods are produced in an improved way, in a way that has a lower impact. And so we're working, for example, with cocoa farmers in West Africa to achieve higher yields and produce varieties of cocoa that are more resistant to pests and disease so that supply is more stable. And then it takes them less land to produce that supply, and then they get a better income. So those are just some of the ways that we're looking at how to reduce our carbon footprint.
You also mentioned looking at where you buy, so looking at land use change, and you made reference to deforestation. Are there certain areas of the world that you're thinking about, you know, you might want to avoid in the future because of this deforestation challenge? I'm thinking of things like palm oil. You know, you're kind of wedded to cocoa because it's a core ingredient. It's only grown in a few places around the world. But there are other replacement oils and innovations for things like palm, perhaps eventually. What are your views on how that debate's evolving internally?
Well, it's a priority for us to figure out, first and foremost, can this be done in a better way? Can we work with certain partners to assure that there is less deforestation? Can we work with certifiers, for example, and help better understand their practices for certification, for example, of palm oil and other goods, to make sure that really that impact of reducing deforestation is something that they're tracking in a robust way and is actually translating into results. So that's kind of our first approach. And also, we have a lot of investment in these areas, and we have a longstanding partnerships with many of the producers of these goods. So it makes sense for us to sort of look at those options first of how we can work together to address the problem head on. That said, of course, it's important to us to also look at the areas where that kind of destruction isn't happening and keep that in mind as we continue to grow and look for new areas to source from and as our business grows and we need to source more ingredients.
Okay, thank you. A final question about how you talk to farmers. Mars is a really interesting company, you know, famously incredibly private and then sort of got the sustainability bug. And I heard it was, you know, a couple of family members who were on the board got very excited about it. And obviously as a commodity-driven business, it's become central to your strategy. How do you talk to farmers about how Mars thinks about sustainability and land use and so on? Do you do it on the basis of certification and their sort of technocratic approach? Or do you talk about values of the founders and owners of the company and the fact that sustainability really seems to be a real mission for the company now that seems to transcend money in business?
You're absolutely right. But in fact, I would argue that it's something that has always been a part of our business. It's something that was part of our founding principles, the principle of responsibility, taking responsibility for the impact that we have on people and the planet, and mutuality, making sure that anything that we do that's going to benefit us as a business is also going to benefit the farmers, our customers, consumers, and our suppliers, because we feel that when there's a mutual benefit, that's the kind of benefit that will endure over the long term. So it's always been part of our core values, but maybe we've started to talk about it a bit more as we've taken this sort of next step on our journey to actually announce big, bold sustainability targets. How we talk to farmers, I mean, it really differs and is unique to each different value chain. So in some cases, and I mentioned cocoa earlier, we have much closer relationships with producers because we've been working in certain regions for a number of decades, working to improve conditions, to improve livelihoods, and also to improve supply. And so we have a closer relationship directly with those farmers, and it's all about their well-being, their livelihoods, which ultimately translates into more stable and higher quality supply for us. In other commodities where we're not such a big influencer as we are in cocoa, we work with the various roundtables and trade associations and try to work with them on initiatives that they've already started with farmers to improve practices related to soy production, for example. So it really differs depending on the commodity. And what we really want to do is just make sure in each situation, we figure out what role makes most sense for us to play, where we can be most influential to have a positive impact.
Great. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for your time today. And listeners, if you haven't looked at it, I commend to you the Mars Sustainability Plan. What's it called, Ashley? What's the name?
Sustainable in a Generation.
Sustainable in a Generation. I think it really brightened up what was in some cases a slightly dark year last year with all the sort of pressure on FMCG companies and buyouts and so on. Then you guys brought out that strategy, and I think it really helped kind of give a fillip to the industry, and I commend it as a strategy that other companies, I think, should really take a close look at and try to follow. So, Ashley, thank you so much for your time today and coming to the conference. And listeners, please do check back to the website or your favourite podcast app soon for more podcasts from Innovation Forum. Thank you.